Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning into Iris Today. This is the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 22nd. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather forecast first thing. This one is coming from the National Weather Service. Today, we have a 20% chance of showers after 1 o'clock this afternoon. We'll have increasing clouds with a high near 67 degrees. It'll be windy today and all this week. Today, it'll be a south-southwest wind from 8 to 13 miles per hour and increasing to 18 to 23 miles per hour in the afternoon. In the afternoon, winds could gust as high as 34 miles per hour. Tonight, showers are likely, mainly before 1 o'clock a.m. Mostly cloudy, with a low around 48 degrees and windy, with a south-southwest wind 13 to 23 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 34 miles per hour. There will be a chance of precipitation at 60%. New precipitation amounts of less than a tenth of an inch are possible. Then tomorrow, we have a 30% chance of showers, and again, mainly before 1 p.m. Mostly sunny, with a high near 65 degrees. It'll be windy. Tomorrow night, it'll be mostly clear, with a low around 36 degrees and windy. Wednesday will be sunny with a high near 61, and Wednesday night it'll be partly cloudy and it'll get down to about 40 degrees overnight. Thursday will have a 30% chance of showers after 1 p.m. It'll be mostly sunny with a high near 64 and breezy this time. Thursday night showers are likely, mostly cloudy with a low around 47 degrees and windy. Chance of precipitation for Thursday night is set at 70%. On Friday, showers are likely, and there's a possibility of a thunderstorm. Mostly cloudy on Friday, with a low around 49 degrees. It'll be windy. The chance of precipitation is set at 70%. And for Saturday, a 40% chance of showers, partly sunny, with a high near 68, and it will be breezy. Now let's turn to the front page of the Courier for some local news. Something's cooking in Applington. Peppercorn Pantry, named one of America's best restaurants. The story filed by Holly Hudson Hill and begins with a photograph showing two women wearing red, and the caption says, Peppercorn Pantry owner Mary Meyer films an episode of America's Best Restaurants with host Danielle DiTomo in the restaurant's kitchen in Applington on Thursday. Dateline, Applington. Thursday was a big day for Mary Meyer, owner of Peppercorn Pantry. As she peeked out the front window of her establishment, a brightly colored van pulled up. After a years-long process, the crew for America's Best Restaurants arrived to film a segment highlighting Meyer, her food, and her business. Quote, They called me a couple of years ago, Meyer said. They asked some questions, and I had meetings with executives so they could get to know me, unquote. Meyer found out Peppercorn Pantry would be featured on the ABR Roadshow more than 6 months ago. Quote, It's very special, she said. I work hard, and it's nice with any job or opportunity to be recognized. Quote, I admit I was a little scared. A lot of the restaurants they highlight are big restaurants. We have 42 chairs. That was my only hesitation. But they said they've seen our reviews and photos we've posted, unquote. As the ABR Roadshow crew members began setting up for filming, host Danielle DiTomo chatted with Meyer, asking questions and filling her in on what to expect. The segment will feature three of Meyer's most popular menu items, spinach pie, angel coconut tort, and raspberry parfait pie. Meyer had gathered ingredients and prepped prior to filming. She seemed completely at home in the restaurant's roomy kitchen. Once filming started and Meyer demonstrated how to make her spinach pie, she chatted naturally with DiTomo. Quote, This is a recipe the original owner, Molly Shipper, and I created together in 1987, she explained. She shared that the raspberry pie was inspired by a recipe on the back of a package of frozen raspberries. Quote, It's similar to one my mother-in-law made for my husband, she said. We just tweaked it. The session also included an in-depth interview with Meyer. Peppercorn Pantry at 911 Perriott Street has been a staple in Applington for nearly 40 years. Meyer worked for the two previous owners and has owned it herself for 17 years. The business includes a tea room, coffee shop, gift shop, and garden with outdoor seating. In addition to running Peppercorn Pantry, Meyer caters events, supplies food to other outlets, hosts functions at the restaurant, and even has a YouTube channel. She and her husband, Russ, own a century farm outside of Amplington. They have three children. Quote, Zach, our oldest, farms with us and lives just down the road. He is married and has four girls. Our daughter, Julia, lives in Pella and is an elementary school counselor. Her husband is a middle school principal, and they have three children, unquote. And there is Caleb, the youngest, who is as much of a fixture at Peppercorn Pantry as his mom. Caleb, who has special needs, often helps out with catering jobs, deliveries, and night dinners. When the weather allows, he also sells cinnamon and caramel rolls to raise funds for the charity Feed My Starving Children. Meyer often posts about her time with Caleb on the Peppercorn Pantry Facebook page. Meyer is also a master gardener, as evidenced by the plethora of plants that grace the coffee shop, as well as the garden she has created next to the gift shop. Quote, I planted 2,000 tulip bulbs this year, she said. Meyer is also very involved with her church and the at-home Applington group, which holds events and raises funds for her hometown. The group is currently raising money for a public swimming pool. Quote, We want to promote Applington as much as we can, she said. She has published a cookbook named Where Friends Gather, featuring many of the homemade recipes she serves at the tea room. It is available at the Peppercorn Pantry gift shop. It is not the first time Peppercorn Pantry and Meyer have been acknowledged. Peppercorn Pantry was named the best restaurant in Butler County, as well as one of the best restaurants in the state by Travel Iowa. Meyer's Angel Coconut Tort was listed as one of the 100 things to eat in Iowa before you die by the Des Moines Register. Following the editing process, the America's Best Restaurants segment featuring the Peppercorn Pantry will appear on social media channels such as YouTube, Facebook, and the ABR website. And that website is americasbestrestaurants.com. That process is expected to take about 3 months. Follow the Peppercorn Pantry Facebook page for updates. Local black politicians are barraged by racial texts. Vandalism, hate speech, target mayor and supervisor. Maria Cooper is the author of this article, and the dateline is Waterloo. When someone poured corrosive acid on Travis Hall's work truck, he could only wonder what would have happened if he had encountered the perpetrator during the act. Hall, a Black Hawk County supervisor, is one of two black elected officials who were targeted by racist texts, calls, and vandalism for the past 6 months. Quote, I could have been walking out to the truck, and if that person were there, would that have been thrown at me? Hall asked. All of these questions and constant fear that should not be the price of serving in public office, unquote. Hall and Waterloo Mayor Quentin Hart were targeted not because of their policy decisions, but because of their race. Quote, It's sad that in 2024, some individuals still choose to judge others not by the content of our character, but by the color of our skin or political affiliation, Hart said. Taylor Young of Waterloo was booked into the Black Hawk County Jail on Thursday after being detained near Las Vegas in March. Police obtained an arrest warrant for Young in December on misdemeanor harassment charges after he allegedly threatened Hall and Hart in text messages. Hart said he received dozens of text messages calling him the N-word and a monkey, as well as homophobic comments. Hall also received multiple text messages containing racial slurs. Quote, "Go back to Africa with all the other gorillas," one read. The messages came from different phone numbers, but detectives were able to trace the numbers back to Young. Both Hall and Hart said they do not know Young. Hart said he would receive phone calls, sometimes up to 20 a day, attacking him. Other times, the caller would just hang up. One anonymous call threatened his children. Both men said they had received thousands of robo-texts warning them someone was trying to access their online accounts or asking for verification codes to sign up for new accounts, including the dating app Tinder. Their cars were damaged in late October, a week apart. Young has not been charged with the vandalism. Both Hart and Hall said they had garbage thrown in their yards. Hart said security cameras showed people walking on his property and his mail had been tampered with. One piece of mail was covered in a wet substance and was given to the police for testing. Hart does not know the test results. Hall said he had not gotten any hateful texts or calls for the past month and said it seems it was a singular source. Both men have lived in fear since the inundation of messages and vandalism. Hall said he constantly checked everyone driving by his house when he was in his yard or while his daughters were outside. Quote, "All of these things make me have an uneasy feeling, and knowing it was because I'm black, it's a burden," Hall said. "It's certainly been a stressor living in fear of the unknown around every corner or when I pick up the phone," unquote. He said he appreciates law enforcement and the judicial system for taking the threat seriously. Quote, "Quentin and I are not the first black elected officials who have been the target of racism," he continued. "Being a public elected official should not mean you're subject to this," unquote. Now let's turn the page to the Cedar Valley section. Nurse sentenced to probation in Black Hawk County, opioid investigation. And Jeff Reinitz wrote this story, and it's datelined Waterloo. A Cedar Rapids nurse has been sentenced to probation for taking opioid medication from patients at a Black Hawk County hospital where he worked. Luis Ramirez Calles was sentenced to 5 years probation and a $2,000 fine for a charge of acquiring a controlled substance by deception under an agreement with prosecutors in U.S. District Court for Northern Iowa on Wednesday. The sentence will run consecutive with similar charges pending in Iowa's Southern District. Prosecutors allege Ramirez used his position as a nurse to obtain fentanyl between September and October of 2022 in Black Hawk County. Details weren't available. The Southern District charges stem from his time when he worked as a contract travel nurse at an Iowa City hospital in 2021 and 2022. He is charged of combing patient health records, looking for people with opioid prescriptions. In January 2022, he allegedly accessed information for a patient who wasn't under his care and withdrew fentanyl from the Omnicell dispensing machine under that patient's name and used the drug himself, according to court records. He used another patient's information to withdraw a 1 milligram hydromorphone when the patient had a prescription for only 0.5 milligrams, records state. The patient was given 0.5 milligrams, and Ramirez took the other half, records state. He then used that same patient's information to withdraw fentanyl, even though that patient didn't have a prescription for fentanyl, records state. Ramirez pleaded to one count each of wrongfully obtaining identifiable health information and obtaining controlled substances by deception in the Iowa City investigation. Sentencing will be at a later date. A woman and former roommate ordered to repay the lottery. Jeff Reinitz wrote this story, which is datelined Waterloo. An Evansdale woman and her former roommate will have to pay back the Iowa lottery for a winning ticket she cashed in after he allegedly bought it. In a ruling handed down in March, District Court Judge John Sullivan ruled Sandra Jean Crow and Alvin Hans Larson III were jointly responsible for repaying the $30,000. According to authorities, Larson bought the ticket and Crow turned it in for payment in an effort to avoid the state claiming the money for outstanding debt Larson owed to the city of Evansdale. Crow was convicted of misdemeanor lottery fraud at trial and fined $500 plus costs and surcharges. Larson pleaded to misdemeanor lottery fraud and was granted a deferred judgment that will remove the case from his record following probation. The Iowa Lottery Division filed a claim seeking $30,000 in restitution. Crow's defense attorney, Kimberly DePalma, challenged a restitution amount. Quote, "It is uncontested that the ticket involved in this case did validly win $30,000. There was no claim it was fake or Ford's ticket," DePalma argued in court filings. She said the two were attempting to avoid paying Larson's $560 debt, and she suggested restitution be limited to that amount. During the restitution hearing, lottery officials testified the state wouldn't have paid the winnings if they knew the ticket wasn't legally presented for payment. Sullivan ruled Crow, quote, "had no legal right to possess or present the ticket for redemption. Thus, under the statute, she was not entitled to receive the prize." According to court records, the winning ticket was a $3 candy cane crosswords scratch ticket, and Crow took a $21,300 lump sum payout. The alleged scheme came to light about a month later during a dispute between the two. Fire levels Waterloo Homes outbuilding. Story filed by Jeff Reinitz, and it begins with a black and white photograph of the fire department crew fighting the fire which destroyed an outbuilding at 2900 Idaho Street in Waterloo on Thursday. Dateline Waterloo. An early morning fire destroyed an outbuilding at a home on the outskirts of Waterloo early Thursday. A passerby called 911 shortly after 6 a.m. after seeing smoke and flames coming from the building at 2900 Idaho Street. Crews with Waterloo Fire Rescue prevented the flames from spreading to other nearby buildings and extinguished the fire. No injuries were reported. The cause of the fire hasn't been determined yet. The address is owned by Ma K. Hill Incorporated of Cedar Falls, according to property records. Hudson man killed in motorcycle wreck. Jeff Reinitz is the author, and the dateline is Waterloo. A Hudson man died in a Tuesday night motorcycle accident at a Waterloo roundabout, according to police. According to the accident report, Riley Gilbert, 26, was riding his Harley-Davidson LRX east on University Avenue around 9:50 p.m. when he struck a curb near the Fletcher Avenue traffic circle in wet and slippery conditions from recent rain. The motorcycle spun out and Gilbert was thrown and struck a yield sign. The motorcycle then struck the sign in the roundabout. Gilbert was unconscious and not breathing at the scene. Paramedics with Waterloo Fire Rescue took him to Mercy One Waterloo Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead. Gilbert was a volunteer firefighter with Hudson Fire Rescue, according to the organization. Man arrested for burglary in Waterloo after break-in. Story written by Jeff Reinitz. And the dateline is Waterloo. One person has been arrested for breaking into a Waterloo home early Wednesday. A woman called police around 2:20 a.m. after watching the suspect kick open the door to 709 Randolph Street and walk inside. When officers arrived, they found Brett Matthew Farmer, 29, in the area. Outside the home, they discovered the broken door and a bicycle that had been moved in an attempt to steal it, according to court records. Farmer, formerly of Wacoma, was arrested for third-degree burglary. Bond for him was set at $5,000. The burglary came months after Farmer was sentenced for an earlier break-in. He was found inside a home at 215 Boston Avenue on December 26th. He pleaded to a reduced charge of trespassing and on February 7th was sentenced to 45 days in jail. Cedar Falls plans slate of Earth Week activities, handing out milkweed, trash pickup planned. Story written by Andy Malone, and it opens up with a color photograph of some volunteers that are planting milkweed around the city. Dateline Cedar Falls. One of the foundations behind this year's Earth Week in Cedar Falls is the Monarch Club, a Cedar Falls high school club founded by junior Nadia Patel. The group's work has inspired a special offer. The city will hand out up to 150 containers of milkweed plant on a first-come, first-served basis at City Hall, which is 220 Clay Street, Monday through Saturday, for interested residents to plant on their own. They'll come with an informational handout and gardening tag. Quote, "It began with a vision and a creative solution. I could see the relationship between the decrease in monarch population and the impact on the environment and food insecurity," Patel said, about what's become a passion project since developing an interest in environmental science at a young age. The milkweed acts as habitat for these critical pollinators, enhancing growth of produce in the garden where they're planted. The initiative goes many steps further, for instance, in using pig manure as fertilizer. Quote, "Our main focus is raising the monarch butterfly population, but it also connects to a variety of other issues we're helping to fight, like food insecurity and diverting this pig waste from going into our water bodies," Patel said. The Monarch Club grows the plant in the Northeast Iowa Food Bank's garden. It's become responsible for what she says is a yield of thousands of pounds of produce. The group of 20 is also planning projects at Hudson Elementary School, as well as Bess Streeter Aldridge and Orchard Hill Elementary Schools in Cedar Falls. The public can visit other monarch habitat areas at the Hearst Center for the Arts, Clay Street Park, Central Park, and the 2nd and State Streets area. Quote, "The goal is not to end here. It's to keep this going," she added. Additionally, interest in the group trash pickups has increased over the years. Earth Week, Sunday through Saturday, will once again mean free 30-gallon trash bags and cleanup gear for group pickups. They can be acquired at the Public Works Complex at 2200 Technology Parkway, at the transfer station at 1524 State Street, or at City Hall at 220 Clay Street, the Rec Center at 110 East 13th Street, and Hearst Center for the Arts at 304 West Surly Boulevard during normal business hours. Once filled, the blue bags can be brought to the transfer station or deposited near park shelter areas for pickup. Overman Park, Holmes Park, Clay Street Park, Searley Park, Valley Park, Neighbors Park, and Pfeiffer Park for pickup. Participants are reminded that trash must be bagged and secured before placing it for collection. Do not overfill trash bags, and always ensure that they are tied tightly at the top. Quote, "It's a great team-building activity, and no effort is too small, whether you can spare 30 minutes or want to spend a whole afternoon. Volunteering is such a pillar here, and there's a lot of pride in making our community beautiful," said communications specialist Amanda Huseman. There will also be 2 tree plantings at Overman Park on Friday, and milkweed plantings, which will be broadcast on the City of Cedar Falls Facebook page, among other updates on the week, and educational offerings from people like the city arborist and horticulturalist. Cedar Falls Utilities customers can also get in the spirit by visiting one of the local nurseries to purchase a sapling at 40% off, which is regularly offered. Looking to get involved, share photos, or have questions? Contact Huseman by emailing Amanda. Her email address is Huseman, spelled H-U-I-S-M-A-N, at cedarfalls.com, or you can visit www.cedarfalls.com /1778/earth-week. Now we have a story that is about Waverly, Iowa. It's titled, Budget Adopted in Waverly with Notable Cuts and a 4% Rise in Property Tax Collections. Story written by Andy Malone, Dateline Waverly. A difficult budget process came to a close this week in Waverly, with notable reductions. Many hours spent going over expenditure and revenue projections for fiscal year 2025 ended in the City Council voting 6-0 on a budget with 4.01% more in estimated property tax collections, but a 20.24% drop in expenditures. Council member Rodney Drenkow was absent. Tax collections are expected to rise from $8.23 million to $8.56 million, while expenditures decrease from $32.5 million to $25.92 million. The property tax rise from $16.97 per $1,000 of taxable value to $17.12. The rate may be rising, but there was a significant drop in the state residential rollback, or the percentage of a property's assessed value that can be taxed. If a residential property valued at $100,000 were to not change, the result would be an owner's city taxes decreasing from $927 to $793. However, tax bills are expected to be higher for homeowners who saw significant increases in their assessed values. Waverly cuts. The pool was closed for the summer. Cuts were made to library resources, and the engineering and vegetation management departments were eliminated. The personnel reductions include 7 employees, equating to more than $600,000 in general fund savings, as work is outsourced at a reportedly cheaper cost. One of the eventual reductions will be Bill Werger, the city attorney and economic development coordinator, who is retiring this year and whose position won't be filled. Meanwhile, officials expect at least $100,000 in savings by not opening the aging pool and another $150,000 in reductions to the library. City Administrator James Bronner told the council in lengthy closing remarks Monday that he chalked up the difficulties to several factors, including the state cap on how much in taxes can be collected from the increase in property valuations seen in Waverly. Quote, "We will be starting next year's budget probably in the next 30 days because we've got to find a better way to do some of this," he said, noting that, quote, "Year after year, you can't keep spending more than you're taking in. It's simply not sustainable." Bronner said the general fund was the most difficult to figure out because of the tax rate limit for that specific fund as expenses rise. He also said the lack of revenue led to past usage of the city's fund balance to keep its rate relatively steady. Quote, "For years and years and years, the city of Waverly has dipped into its fund balance as needed to either keep that rate the same, keep that levy down, or to try to balance out a little bit less tax," he said. The choice was made as well to take on debt and complete various capital projects. Quote, "Debt has been the driver in the last 4 to 6 years to get things done," Bronner said. "Undertakings have impacted the park system and led to the construction of the Cedar River Parkway, among other things. The city is taking on debt in 2025 to replace rail trail bridges and add a fueling station to help reduce future costs for municipal vehicles." He also said gasoline, steel, vehicle, and insurance cost increases led to the challenges. And now, listeners, we would just like to take a moment to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 22nd, on IRIS, that's IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the blind and the print handicapped. Now, let's listen to this message.
If you're struggling with your mental health, there's something Your Life Iowa wants you to know. It's all right to feel sad, to be angry, to feel depressed, to be anxious, to feel lonely. Something else that's definitely all right? Getting help for your mental health. When you're ready, Your Life Iowa is here for you 24/7. Find support at yourlifeiowa.org. Together, we can make everything all right. Brought to you by the Iowa Department of Public Health.
Now we turn to the obituaries page. In Fayette, Charles Leroy Sheriff, 85, of Fayette, Iowa, passed peacefully on Tuesday morning, April 16, 2024, at Maple Crest Manor in Fayette. Funeral services for Charles will be at 10:30 a.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd, at Grace United Methodist Church in Olwine. Visitation will be from 3 o'clock to 7 o'clock p.m. Monday at the Jameson Smits Funeral Home in Olwine, and for 1 hour before the service at the church on Tuesday. Interment will be at Woodland Cemetery in Olwine, Iowa. Memorials and cards may be directed to Karen Sheriff, 7397 L Avenue in Fayette, Iowa, 52142. There's an online obituary at www.jamesonschmidtfuneralhome.com. Deanne Ray Helfer Damro, age 83, passed away peacefully on April 11, 2024, surrounded by family and loved ones. She endured a long battle with diabetes and congestive heart failure. She was born July 5, 1940, and lovingly adopted by Myrtle Helfer Schaefer and Ralph Helfer through Catholic Charities in Waterloo, Iowa. Deanne graduated from Waterloo East High School in 1958 and attended Pitsey's Beauty School. Soon after, she met and married the love of her life, Jerry Damro, and they spent 53 years together. Dee established and operated the beauty salons at Friendship Village for 44 years. She was blessed to love her work and discovered her soft spot for working with the elderly. Her hobbies included antique collecting, tap dancing, and fun with the family and friends. Dee had a passion for entertaining and found joy in organizing style shows, tea parties, and most of all, the annual Damro Christmas Eve party. Her belief was there was always room for one more at the table. Deanne served as an active member of the Quota Club and her congregation at Sacred Heart Church. She enjoyed spending time with family and grandchildren, supporting them as a super fan in piano recitals, wrestling, community plays, robotics, and hockey. A visitation for Dee will be held from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. on Friday, May 3rd, at Lock at Tower Park, 4140 Kimball, with a vigil service at 6 o'clock. Funeral Mass will take place at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, May 4th, with visitation 1 hour prior at Sacred Heart Church in Waterloo. Burial after the service will be in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to Cedar Valley Hospice, and condolences may be left at www.lockfuneralservices.com. Carol J. Fangman, 85, of Cedar Falls, formerly of Waterloo, Denver, and Waverly, passed away Friday, March 22nd, at Unity Point Health Allen Hospital. Carol was born August 20th, 1938, in Waterloo, the daughter of Harold and Lucille Cameron Rogers. She married Marvin Fangman on March 2nd of 1957 in St. John's Catholic Church of Waterloo. He preceded her in death on January 3rd, 2022. Carol graduated from St. Mary's in Waterloo. She worked as the office manager for the family business from 1986 to 1992 and cared for her family and home. Carol enjoyed boating, sunning, cars, and watching TV. She loved spending time with her family and friends. A mass of Christian burial will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday, April 27th at Blessed Sacrament Church, with interment in Mount Olivet Cemetery. Public visitation will be for 1 hour before services at the church on Saturday. Haggerty Wyckoff Grarup Funeral Service on West Ridgeway is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be directed to the church. Now let's return to local news from the Courier. Here we have a couple of celebrations of note. Happy 80th birthday to Fred Hohmeister, Melody Parker wrote. Dateline Tripola. Fred I. Hohmeister will celebrate his 80th birthday on April 23rd. A card shower is planned in his honor. Hohmeister was born on April 23rd, 1944. Please send cards to Hohmeister at Post Office Box 45, Tripola, Iowa, 50676. And happy 100th birthday to Lorena Westendorf. In Shell Rock, Lorena Westendorf will celebrate her 100th birthday on April 26th. A card shower is planned. The honoree has 4 children and many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Please send cards to 920 North Cherry Street in Shell Rock, Iowa, 50670. Trail cleanup set for April 27th. This is in the column titled Briefs. Dateline Waterloo. The Cedar Valley Trails Partnership and Cedar Valley Cyclists will hold the annual Earth Day Trail Cleanup on April 27th. Individuals or groups can get involved by emailing name, cell number, how many people in the group, and preferred location. That can be emailed to volunteer@cedarvalleytrails.org. Organizers will respond with more information. For Cedar Valley Cyclist members, the focus will be on the Sargent Road Trail from Commercial Street and River Road near downtown Waterloo to downtown Hudson. Volunteers should gather at 9 a.m. at the Viridian Credit Union parking lot at 1827 Ansboro Avenue. Bags and instructions will be available. Volunteers should dress for the weather and wear gloves. Man allegedly sent racist texts to mayor and supervisor. Jeff Reinitz wrote this story. Dateline Waterloo. A Waterloo man has been charged with sending racially charged texts to the city's black mayor and a black county supervisor. Tyler Hunter Young, 43, is charged with 2 counts of misdemeanor harassment. The text targeting Mayor Quentin Hart and Blackhawk County Supervisor Travis Hall came in late October and coincided with vandalism to their vehicles, although no charges have been filed in the vandalism. According to court records, police were called to Hall's home on October 17th for a report of damage to his vehicle, and Hall later received a text in the afternoon calling him a slur word and telling him to, quote, go back to Africa with all the other gorillas, unquote. Hart's vehicle was damaged on October 25th, and he received a 4 a.m. text using insulting and racist language, according to court records. The messages came from different phone numbers, and detectives were able to trace the numbers back to Young, records state. Police obtained an arrest warrant in December following the investigation, but Young apparently left Iowa. He was detained in March in the Las Vegas area, and he was returned to Waterloo on Thursday, according to police. Young was released from jail after posting bond. This isn't the first time Young has been charged with using cell phones to harass someone. In November 2016, he allegedly ordered pre-recorded comic calls from comedycalls.com that were sent to his former boss, Dharmendra Patel. The calls woke the victim and his wife in the early morning hours, according to court records. Young denied any involvement when police approached him, but officers subpoenaed the website and traced the order to his internet provider address, records state. Young eventually pleaded to third-degree harassment and was ordered to pay $200 plus costs and surcharges. A 5-year restraining order was also issued. Black Hawk County Republican leadership resigns, replacements elected. Andy Malone wrote this, and the dateline is Waterloo. The Black Hawk County Republican Party elected new leadership Thursday after 3 of the 4 members of the executive committee suddenly resigned. The appointments of April Melton, owner of WCF Photography, and Jim Buschkamp, a retired marketing and media professional, as chairperson and co-chairperson, respectively, comes in the aftermath of a controversial split vote by the Central Committee that was responsible, in part, for 2 of the officers leaving. At this point in the article, we have a color photograph taken of the storefront of the Republican Party's headquarters, and we see a big sign in the window that says Trump Pence. A majority of the Central Committee favored keeping the headquarters open at least until the November election. Others wanted to close the building and put those funds toward campaigns. The new leadership insists, quote, our future is bright, and feels sincere and dedicated people will lead to positive results. Quote, we've got a lot to get done in the next 200 days, Melton said, before the next party election in January. Former co-chairperson Jacob Talo and Treasurer Margaret Klein left the Central Committee, citing a desire for more fiscal responsibility in letters to the editor submissions to the Courier and on Facebook. Quote, over 2 years, besides writing a couple of big checks, the committee as a whole did very little to perpetuate its vision, electing Republicans, wrote Talo in a letter to the editor. Quote, despite good professional leaders, the local GOP's decade-long reputation for dysfunction continues, unquote. Chair Craig Lohman cited personal reasons and no longer being able to give the time to the position. He will still be a member of the Central Committee. Quote, yes, it was disappointing, he said, about vote against closing the building, but that wasn't the reason he left. I've been disappointed before, he said. Klein said on her Facebook page, Margaret Klein Uncensored, that, quote, the political parties seem to have been taken over by their radical wings. Quote, moderates are being driven out. My Democrat friends tell me they have experienced it, and from my recent experience with the Republicans, I'd say it's true, unquote. Melton, who ran unopposed, told the Courier that, quote, as Central Committee members, we represent the voices of Republicans in Black Hawk County. My goal as chairperson is to ensure all Republican voices are represented, she said. Her objectives include developing an outreach and fundraising plan and educating voters and enlisting poll watchers. Melton also told party members that she's ordered a flag representing the Republican presidential nominee, Donald Trump, whom she supported for the office. Quote, if you ran for mayor and lost one motion, you wouldn't just resign, Melton said about those who departed. They resigned and left people unrepresented, unquote. Klein also noted in an interview her feelings there was a hostile environment promoted by members of the party she felt weren't welcoming to those who didn't think like them. Quote, they wanted President Trump's name on everything, she said. The party held its election behind closed doors Thursday for new leadership as part of an executive session called for by member Scott Adkins. He was supported emphatically, though some could be heard in the voice vote disagreeing with holding an executive session without the press. Support for new leadership could be heard through applause outside in the hallway. Additionally, a party member had his motion defeated to postpone elections until a future meeting. He wanted to give the party time to consider possible candidates for the positions. Secretary Janet German stayed on board and no treasurer was elected Thursday. Lohman, Talo, and Klein resigned after approximately 2 years in charge. But Melton said a few other members of the party did as well. Lohman said there were no others, but noted a lot of good new members. Talo and Klein were among those who authored a report last month explaining why, quote, the committee cannot justify $12,000 a year in office expenses given the current lay of the land in Black Hawk County, unquote. Melton originally wrote an email last month that she apparently did not have permission to send, letting all those on the party's email list, including the courier, know that the Republican stronghold in Black Hawk County is under threat because of the proposal to vacate the building. During a closed session on March 21st, the party voted 20-19 to discuss the office's future after the November election. March meeting minutes provided at Thursday's session show the official vote was 21-19 after receiving a letter from a member in support of keeping the office open. Also discussed during what the minutes described as an intensive meeting were alternatives and pop-up locations. The current space is rented from NFG LLC at 910 Decathlon Drive and sits next to Triple Diamond Tattoo in the same building. Waterloo sells $26 million in bonds, the majority for fiber project. Story written by Maria Cooper and Dateline Waterloo. The city sold $26 million in bonds as it issued the first debt for construction of the fiber network backbone and fiber to the premises project. The city council approved three separate bonds to a financial institute during a special meeting on Wednesday. The sale was for two bonds at $720,000 and $5.28 million for the city's capital projects and a $20 million bond for construction of the city's fiber network. All three bonds were negotiated through Piper Sandler and Company of Des Moines. Waterloo launched a municipal broadband utility called Waterloo Fiber in 2023. The city, which worked with Spear Financial, negotiated its bonds this year rather than seeking them competitively. Maggie Berger, the institution's senior vice president, said it was convenient to use one company due to having to issue the $20 million bond. She said the negotiated rates were spot on with market rates and provided comparable bonds from other cities. The $20 million bond is for 3 years. The short-term bond is to analyze the amounts the city uses for its backbone project compared with the Waterloo Fiber's fiber to the premises project. Once that is decided, the city will refinance the bond and each entity will pay back its percentage of the bond. Berger equated this to renting an apartment, but the roommate with the bigger bedroom pays more of the rent. It was awarded at $20.25 million with a true interest rate of 4.06%. The $720,000 bond was awarded at $715,680 with a true interest rate of 5.31% and should be paid off in 2030. The $5.28 million bond was awarded at $5.54 million with a true interest rate of 3.52% and should be paid off in 2036. Moody's Investment Service recently gave the city an AA2 rating for the 15th consecutive year. The rating is considered high quality, according to the service. The bond rating helps potential investors to determine the risk they take if they choose to invest in city bonds. Turning to the opinion page now, making sense of the men-women wage gap. This written by Rachel Gresner. What's behind the wage gap between men and women? It has narrowed recently. In 2023, women's median weekly wages of $1,005 equaled 84% of men's $1,202 in weekly wages. That's an all-time high and a distinct uptick from a fairly steady 80% to 82% between 2004 and 2020. Yet, 84% is still not 100%, even though equal pay for equal work has been the law of the land since the Equal Pay Act of 1963 and Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So what gives? Are women really being paid only 84 cents on the dollar to do the same job as men? Of course not. In this day and age, that wouldn't fly. For starters, America now has 2.3 million more job openings than unemployed workers. So any woman who is being paid less than a male co-worker for the same job has a good shot at finding a new job where she will be paid equally. And even if workers didn't have the upper hand in the labor market, it never profits employers to underpay women or overpay men. Employers who discriminate based on sex or age or eye color or shoe size or any other biological factor will disproportionately attract the types of worker whom they overpay. Excessive employee costs translate to lower profits, less investment, and higher prices for customers, who will flock to businesses with lower prices. Then what is behind the significant difference in pay between men and women? The short answer is that the pay gap is a choice gap. The data cited in the gender pay gap looks only at the median earnings of full-time wage and salaried workers. It doesn't account for important factors such as education, occupation, experience, and hours, which account for nearly all the difference in earnings between men and women. Accounting for all these measurable factors all but eliminates the pay gap to a mere 1 cent differential. Even that controlled pay gap doesn't account for difficult-to-measure factors such as workplace flexibility, which women and particularly mothers tend to prioritize. An analysis of Uber drivers estimated that they value the flexibility the platform provides at $150 per week. Though the true pay gap is minuscule, some policymakers still want to see women earning the same amounts as men. The problem with trying to force equal earnings is that it could only be done by forcing women to make the same choices as men or vice versa. Take the Massachusetts Transportation Bay Association, for example. Despite rigid pay scales that precluded pay discrimination, the association had an 11% pay gap because women took more unpaid leave and worked fewer overtime hours. When the company restricted flexibility and hours worked, the pay gap fell to 6%, but the lost flexibility was especially costly for women. Both Sweden and Norway tried to help women by passing daddy quotas, intended to push men to take on more of the responsibilities of parenthood. Norway's daddy quota had, quote, strong and statistically significant negative effects on women's labor market outcomes. Sweden's daddy quota didn't increase men's household roles or improve women's labor market outcomes, but it did increase the probability of divorce and reduce household incomes because women took more unpaid time off. Google, in an attempt to remedy pay gaps, began conducting a pay audit every year and established a fund to compensate employees who it found had been unfairly compensated. Google's analysis had a surprising result. The company was underpaying men. Consequently, the majority of Google's $9.7 million in gender compensation awards in 2019 went to men. While it can be tempting for policymakers to try to, quote, help women or minorities by imposing top-down government controls that attempt to equalize pay across gender or race, those policies could end up hurting the people they intend to help. Most workers, men and women alike, want to be paid based on what they produce, and they want job opportunities that align with their personal and career priorities. Instead of telling companies how much to pay their workers and limiting the types of jobs available, Lawmakers should work to reduce barriers to work and burdens on job creators so more women and men can attain the type of work that's best for them. Our author here, Gressler, is a senior research fellow in workforce and public finance in the Rowe Institute at the Heritage Foundation. Now, the Metro Briefs column, Sons of Norway to Meet Tuesday in Cedar Falls. The Sons of Norway will hold its next meeting and program at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday at the Women's Club. Kate Levasseur, an archivist from Des Moines, will speak about the World Food Prize. Reservations can be called into area code 319-277-2394. Next, World War II experiences, topic at meeting, Waterloo. Roman Frakowitz is slated to talk with the Cedar Valley Historical Society about the World War II experiences of his father, Zygmunt, a member of the Polish military who was captured and sent to a prisoner of war camp. At the time of his father's death in 1992, Frakowitz knew very little about his father, asking few questions of a man who offered little detail of his service. In 2015, Roman began a blog recording the documents he found on his father's history. The meeting is at 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Grout Museum, 503 South Street in Waterloo. And now, friends, that's going to do it for the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Monday, April 22nd. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. You can listen to a recording of this reading of the Courier or of the other newspapers around the state that we read. Just visit our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.